Fall in, bookies. We've got ourselves another edition of the Brew University Book Club Podcast. And today we are continuing our summer reading series with Make Your Bed by Admiral William McRaven. I have assembled a crackerjack squad of book club readers for you, and I'm going to introduce them to you now so that we can dive right on into this, beginning with the four-star general of book club herself, Suzanne Borgia. Hi, Suzanne.
Thanks. Thanks for having me back.
Absolutely. Our pleasure. Also joining us today, Dustin Schatz, our delivery director in Tampa. Hi, Dustin.
Hey, good morning, Jeff.
Good morning. Bria Lee is also here, our safety manager from Fort Myers. Hi, Bria.
Good morning.
And the grand general of our joint operations himself, Pete Marr, president of Florida, is with us this morning as well. Good morning, Pete.
Good morning.
Welcome, everyone. Glad to have you with us. It is another great day for a book club. And as I said, today we're going to be talking about a little book called Make Your Bed, which is a fantastic little read if you've not yet had a chance to get your hands on it or see the speech. Back in 2014, Admiral Bill McRaven gave a commencement speech for the University of Texas. And sort of based on the university's motto, what starts here changes the world, he outlined 10 principles that he had sort of picked up over his very distinguished military career that he believed would help these graduates on their way to do just that, changing the world. The speech was a huge hit. It was a huge hit at the ceremony, but more notably, it went viral. This speech garnered over 10 million views and became very well known for its catchphrases, making your bed being a particular one that I'm sure we'll be talking about. And so that inspired him to put it into a book. And here we are 95 pages later, 10 principles that can help you change the world. And, some great stories about his career and such along the way. So let me do as I always do and kick it off by opening it up to the whole book club group here and say, what'd you guys think of Make Your Bed by Admiral McRaven? First impressions, first thoughts. Had you seen this book before, read this book before? Have you seen the speech? Just anything you have in terms of context of getting started with this book, I'd love to hear from you.
I haven't read the book. I have read the book now, but I've heard the speech before a couple of times. I think it's good how the book kind of elaborates a little bit more on the points that he touches in the speech. And having been in the military myself, it's surprising how much of that relates, even though I was never a Navy SEAL like he was. But a lot of the training and the principles they teach and just leadership in general, just how well they flow back and forth. So it was a good read. I enjoyed it.
Yep, I agree, Dustin. Also ex-military Army and not a Navy SEAL, but related every point in the book. And I've already, before today, I read this book three times and probably, I believe I played the video twice in my leadership meetings because I believe it's an inspiring book for every person. You don't have to be in the military. And I have to admit, I read it one more time last night. And, there is a couple of chapters in there that even, choked me up and made me cry. Because when you read it, it actually relates to life, what you've done, past, present, what you want to do in the future. So I think it's an incredible book that everyone should read.
Yeah, going off of what Pete said, I was never in the military myself, but it hit home with me in many ways, and I've read it a few times before, and it's a really, really good book, and it meant a lot to me in different times of my life. So it was a very good, enjoyable read, and it was good to read it again.
Yeah, I'd read the book after one of Pete's leadership meetings, seeing the speech. But this round, I listened to the audible with the book just to refresh. And it's neat to hear his voice going deeper into the stories. So, also available on Audible.
Not a sponsor, but we'll give him a plug. Why not? Yeah. My first exposure to this speech and this book actually also came from Pete. We put this in one of the leadership meetings. We put it in a couple of times, but several years back, you sent me the clip as one of the ones to put in, and it struck me immediately as just being a great speech and very inspirational. And then a few years later, I was doing as I do, wandering through a bookstore, and I found a copy of it amongst the shelves. And I was like, oh my goodness, I didn't know he'd gone to the lengths of having written all this down to a book as well, and picked it up a few copies on a sale. And handed them out to a few people and really enjoyed it and thought that the book did an even better job of sort of expanding upon the very simple but poignant principles he makes. So it's a great little read. It's a great story. And, it, you know, again, 95 pages. It's a quick read. You can knock it out in a night. You can listen to it on a long day's drive. But my goodness, it what you take away from it, whether you've served or not, I think the principles here are really great. And so I want to dive right on into them. So he gives us 10 principles that he believes are key to success. And he sort of tells a little story along with each one. And the first one is to start your day with a task completed, which is where the title of this book and probably the most famous part of this book comes from, which is making your bed. He tells the story about the importance of making your bed and the expectations that that the drill sergeants would have that every day began with a made bunk in a very particular way. So, Bookies, what did you think about making your bed? What in that first section stood out to you?
Well, I know for me, when I read this book the first time, I never used to make my bed. I'd get up and go. But I think the biggest thing, once I read this book and I start doing that, the biggest reward for me was coming home to less of a chaotic feeling and just being able to kind of just see orderly space and just being able to get into bed and actually relax. It felt different.
Yeah, I definitely can relate to that because for whatever reason, getting into a made bed is twice as comfortable. I don't know what it is, but it's definitely more comfortable.
Did you guys make your bed before the military?
No.
I did.
Yeah. I wondered if it was a habit that came from that.
I did. I made my bed. I don't know why I made my bed, but I made my bed before the military. And, you know, as crazy as it sounds, you know, through basic training, some of my fellow soldiers struggled making their bed. They didn't quite understand it. And I remember one of my leadership meetings when I actually polled like the whole team, like who made their bed, who didn't. And maybe we had fun around it. You know, some like they found it pointless, like because, as you know, I get home and why do I got to unmake the bed again? I'm just going into the bed. And it means something different for a lot of people. You know, for me, it's just second nature. I'm like an orderly type person. So I got up and made my bed. I felt good about it. And I started my day. But, you know, there are some days I'll get up and you know what, it's gonna be a relaxing day and I might not make my bed. It's rare, but I think it's just, you know, your mentality of the day. So usually I'm getting up and making my bed no matter what day it is. But sometimes if I have that mode of relaxation or just a downtime, you know, the bed might skip a day.
So I was not a bed maker. Prior to reading this book at all, ever. I was definitely on team. What's the point? I'm going to crawl back in there anyway. And what struck me again, having no military background, when I heard this section at first and then read it again in the book, the first thing that I thought of is, you know, I do really love, one of my favorite things about staying in a hotel is you come back at the end of a day and that bed is all nice and made up for you, right? And there is something about that, Dustin, to your point about it, getting in a freshly made bed does feel different. It feels better. It's more relaxing and somehow more rewarding. And so I sort of have become a convert and started getting up now, and I do the bed every morning before I go. And there's just something very pleasant about getting back at the end of the day and seeing that. So I think it's such a simple thing, but the whole point he's there to make is it's a simple thing that can actually change your mentality, change your mood. And I think it works because, number one, there's something about starting the day with a win that really is a big thing. When you first, you know, if you get that first task of the day done right, it sets you up and it builds that momentum for success. I had a mentor who once told a group of us, he said, I'm going to ruin your alarm clock for you forever. And he did. And he said, if you hit the snooze button in the morning, the first choice you made that day was to procrastinate. And that's the choice that set the tone for the rest of your day. The first decision of the day when you hit the snooze button is you're choosing to procrastinate. And it's kind of in that same vein of, you know, what's the first decision you're going to make that day? And is it going to set the tone for the rest of it? So I'm curious, has making the bed, does that something that feels like for any of you that it's leading you to those other better decisions on the days that you do it versus the days maybe you forget?
I think subconsciously. I don't really think I think about it, but I know that there's many days I'm rushing, especially like today I had to be here at 5. And I got up and I did not want to make the bed, but I knew that was something I needed to do. So just taking that extra couple of seconds to do something and actually do it well, not just kind of throw it together, maybe kind of sets the tone for the day that maybe I don't feel I have time to complete tasks or do them as well as I want to, just to kind of get them done. But at least if I start the day doing that, maybe I then do the rest of my tasks that way.
Yeah, I don't think it necessarily affects me, mainly just because it's muscle memory at this point. It's just part of my routine. But what it does affect me is if I don't do it, then I'm out of my routine and then my system is off, and that will actually affect the rest of my day. So doing it, not so much, but not doing it, it would.
Yep, I look forward to doing it. I get up. I agree, Dustin. Muscle memory. I get up, I make it, I enjoy it. And then when I make it, sometimes my wife will try to make the bed and I like, no, that's for me to do. So she knows that like I want to do that. But then when she read the book, now we both fight over who wants to make the bed. It's pretty funny, actually. And I just, you know, when I do it, it is muscle memory, but I also do it going, you know, it's a small task. When I'm done and it's complete, I feel good. And then I was like, well, you know, you start off with, if start off a small task can lead to accomplishing the bigger ones that await you for the day.
The other thing that struck me in this section is he tells this story, you know, that he gets up, he makes his bed, and then he starts talking pretty elaborately about the drill instructor who's coming over to inspect the bed. And he spends a lot of time there because the drill instructor spends a lot of time there. And I thought it was interesting, you know, the level of precision and detail that the drill instructor is checking the bed, checks the corners, checks the angle of the pillow, bounces a quarter off the top of it. And it really made me think about, as a leader, do I inspect things with the same amount of intensity that I expect them from my team? Because that's what the drill instructor is doing. He's coming in and saying, you've taken the time to make this bed to the standard I've set. I'm not just going to glance at it and it looks right from across the room or it looks right from a walk by. I'm going to get up in there and really check it. And I thought that was an interesting thing that he doesn't talk about it directly. Sort of just, it's part of the story. But it did strike me that as a leader, the drill instructor took just as much time, it seemed, to inspect the work as the person doing the work, and certainly at the same level of detail that they were expecting it to be. So what are you guys' thoughts on, if we're going to have high expectations of our team, of our people, I think we owe it to them to inspect at the same level and the same intensity that we expect them to perform. But I didn't know if that was something that anybody else picked up on.
I did, but I think we would take it one step further where he talks about you're not going to get praised for making a good bed. But I think in our culture, we do even praise our employees, or it's important to, for even the simple tasks of just doing their work. And I don't remember if it was the bed or the dress, but he said you're not going to get praised for doing it right necessarily.
Yep, that was the separation. You know, the high performers wanted that praise, and then when they didn't get it, they really struggled. And then I agree. The teaching is, you know, that's what's expected of you, so you shouldn't get the praise. And we do that here at JJ Taylor. It's, you know, we want to praise our people, but sometimes if you're just praising them on everything they do, so we want to try to balance between, you know, your daily job and accomplishing that, but praising what they've done above and beyond, and separating that. And I think that's what the dual instructors are trying to home in on here. Is pay attention to every detail and do it right. That's what's expected of you. We're not going to praise you for that. So that was my learning on it.
Yeah, and I think it shows too, if you can't get the small little things right, how are you going to accomplish the big things?
Final thoughts on making the bed before we jump to our next section.
The only thing I wanted to throw in there, I thought it was good where he talked about when he was bunking in med bay, and they talked about, if you walked into med bay or a hospital and you seen the beds all in disarray and none of them were made, what kind of medical treatment do you think you'd get there? And it kind of goes, you know, when you look at people's desks, when you ride in someone's car, if you get into a pigsty or it looks disheveled, you automatically have, a perception of that person. You know, you're kind of judging books by its cover. But if you were to walk into someone's nice and clean, you know, nice, clean, organized office, and they're not in it, you're going to automatically think, okay, this guy's, got his stuff together. you know, they're good to go. You know, you get a good first impression by that, I think.
Dustin, having walked into your office many times to a very clean and streamlined desk, I can attest that you are practicing what you're preaching on that one for sure. On a side note, everybody stay out of my office until further notice. All right. So the next thing he talks about as next principle is that you can't go it alone. And I think this is another great section in which he talks about all the different help that he received along the way as part of his career, the different people who made an impact on him and helped him in various ways. So what did you guys think about you can't go it alone?
I think this relates to J.J. Taylor as a whole more than, I wouldn't say more than any other chapter, but it definitely corresponds, you know, directly as far as a delivery driver can't do his job without the salesman and vice versa. You know, we're a huge team and teamwork is in peril. Like we couldn't function without all parts of the team working in unison. So I think it was a great chapter and it relates very well.
Relates very well to J.J. Taylor. There's so many spokes in the wheel, and I've talked about it many times in our leadership meetings. You know, one spoke breaks and it doesn't work. So whether at J.J. Taylor in life, you can't. Well, let me backpedal. As human beings, you think you can do it alone. You think you can do it all yourself, and then at some point in time, whether in life or at work, you realize that you can't do it alone, and you need, you know, someone to help you through whatever you're trying to accomplish. You know, if you're new on the job, how do you start a new job without any help? You know, you can't do it by yourself. So it's one of my favorite chapters of his book.
One of the things that struck me in this chapter is he talks all about those who have helped him. And I think because of his own personal humility, he doesn't go to mention it, but he, you know, how many people did he also help along the way? I have to believe there are dozens, if not hundreds of people who would, you know, name Admiral McRaven as being a huge help and inspiration to them as well. And so when we talk about you can't go it alone, I think it's important to understand the willingness and ability to accept help from others, but equally as important to give the help that you can to others around you. And I thought that was interesting that he chose not to focus on that as part of his story, but also that you can tell from the way it's written that clearly it's a two-way street and that, you know, it's giving help as much as receiving it that makes it possible.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting too when he talks about sort of the responsibility he felt when he was sick, or talking about paddling the boat, and you could definitely tell when one person was missing. But it was even on his heart that if he was sick and he was out, he knew other people were going to have to, you know, pick up the paddling for him.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's kind of the same thing at work, or, you know, between sales, delivery, between other drivers, is not everyone can be 100% all the time. So, you know, having that teamwork, you know, you have a little bit, someone's going to pick up your slack someday, you're going to pick up other people's slack another day. So I think it's great to, you know, keep that in mind as well.
Yeah, we talk about that concept of a relationship bank when we teach sales and customer service and delivery and all that. And it really spoke to that to me, where it's like, you know, it's some days you're going to be, you know, feeling that burden of having to pick up other people's slack, but the day is going to come when you're going to need that help too. And that constant of making deposits into the relationship bank by giving a little more than you need to all the time keeps something in there for the day when you need to make that withdrawal yourself. So I thought it was a really good point, even though it wasn't made directly, that he alludes to that idea that help swings in every direction. And when you can't go it alone, it doesn't always just mean that you need help, but it means you also need to give help wherever you can.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with asking for help, receiving help, giving help. Doesn't mean you failed. Doesn't mean you can't do it. So, you know, you need to be comfortable with asking when it's available.
Yeah, it's tough love. When he was, when you read, when he was, had the parachute accident, you know, and when I read that, you know, I try to put myself in his shoes, for lack of a better word. I'm like, I'd crap my pants if I was in that position. And, you know, after that, you know, all the people that helped him push through and giving him that tough love. And, you know, he self-admitted that he wouldn't have made it through that if it wasn't for, all his friends that were coming and pushing him and his wife, Jordan, pushing him through. And that's what we all need as humans. You know, we need, we may think we don't need that, but we need to be pushed through the, you know, any goal in life, whether whatever you're trying to achieve in life, but and also through the tough times, like Suzanne mentioned, when in the boat. You can't do it alone.
All right, let's talk about Only the Size of Your Heart Matters. This is a fun little section in which he tells the story of some of his classmates in Navy SEAL boot camp that, you know, by first appearance, may or may not measure up to the expectations we have of what a SEAL is. You know, he even says, you know, we sort of have this vision in our head of the hardened warrior, big, tall, tough, muscular. And yet in this section, we learn that not everybody that becomes a Navy SEAL fits that assumed mold of what one can be, and that that's the importance of looking beyond the first. So thoughts or takeaways from Only the Size of Your Heart Matters.
I can definitely relate, especially in delivery. We have everyone from all ages, all shapes, all sizes. You have young guys getting outpaced by some of the older guys that we have working. I mean, it just goes all over the map. We have all walks of life. You can't judge a book by its cover. It really is the size of their heart.
And this is a little bit of a shameless plug for another podcast we did, but it definitely relates to just the go-getter attitude and really wanting to do the job, not necessarily worrying about the cover of the book.
It's kind of funny, when I read this, it made me laugh a little when we were doing our ATI Safety Week recently, and we did the wall sit challenge, and, you know, looking at certain people, you tend to think, oh, you might not do so well, or even myself, I thought I'd be able to do better, but, I mean, I was very surprised by our winners there, so it just kind of made me think of that. Activity we did recently, but yeah, you can't look at someone and just assume ever.
Well, Dustin won the plank challenge here, so I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's an also a good chapter too, because a lot of things in life is really just about how much effort you're willing to put in. You know, if you go for a run, if you're having a hard day at work, anything that you think is going to defeat you, it's really just all inside. So, you know, I think it relays well that it's really up to you. If you can push through it, push forward. It's about the size of your heart and, you know, your work ethic and everything else that goes with it. It's not necessarily your physical capabilities.
Not at all. And when we do our Steinhoisten 2.0 for next year, when your heart is convicted and strong, that's right, Dustin. I've seen 100-pound, you know, on-premise delivery drivers hoisting two kegs, you know, in each hand that I couldn't even attempt to do. But when you have a strong heart, you know, it doesn't matter size, shape, you know, the heart will persevere over anything.
I think as leaders, what I took away from this is two things. One, you know, don't make assumptions based on first impressions. And that's so hard to do sometimes, especially in an interviewing process where we have limited time to get to know somebody. But you've got to be willing to push past those first assumptions. And two, when we talk about the importance of having heart, of being the go-getter, that comes from a place of why. You know, in the case of the Admiral and his cohorts, you know, they were driven by their deep desire to successfully achieve becoming Navy SEALs. As leaders, if we don't have a strong purpose laid out for our team, if we're not establishing the vision, then what are our people's hearts even chasing? And I think that's the other piece of this, is it's our job, you know, in something where we may not have such an obvious why as graduation, or earning that title of Navy SEAL, I think it's on us as leaders to make sure that our people have a mission that is heartfelt and that they can drive towards, that will inspire and motivate them to lead with their hearts and be in it at all times. So, you know, as a leader of your team, ask yourself, what is the why that I'm giving my folks to drive towards that's going to engage them on that level? Because if they don't have it, then they're not going to be able to give everything they've got until they can engage that emotional drive to do better.
That's right. Well, I believe J.J. Taylor has that mission. I think it's called First Choice. And speak to it in every type of meeting that I have, that no matter what we do, it starts with our first choice vision. I know most everyone knows that, and I'll talk about it. So as our leaders in JJ Taylor, and using our heart through first choice should be how we behave and act and lead and push that through our people. And as Dustin reflected, it's if we have any leaders that struggle, we can help them along. But if they can't grasp that, it may not work, because it's the single most foundation of our company and why JJ Taylor is so great and why so many partners of ours tell us best in class. And they go, what is it? And I said, well, it's simple. Look at this. It's on the wall, or you know, I pull up a one pager out of a deck. I go, this is why we're so good. It's because we all are believing in our first choice mission. And I'm proud of our people, because when you believe in it, then it's just not a piece of paper. You know, they're actually acting it out through their hearts.
Yeah, I definitely agree. Because we have a lot of things hung up back here and here and back here in delivery for, you know, motivation, employee of the month, all kinds of things. But if I didn't believe in it, which in turn gets my managers to buy into it, and they didn't believe in it, you know, it would just be pieces of paper hanging on the wall, like Pete said.
So I love this next section of the book called Life's Not Fair, Drive On. In this section, Admiral McRaven tells us the story of becoming a sugar cookie, which is an act in Navy SEAL training in which, in full uniform, you are required to run down into the surf, get wet, and then back up onto the sand and roll around until you are completely dusted in very uncomfortable sugar-like sand. And you will stay in this particular state of discomfort and sand accessory for the rest of your day, becoming a sugar cookie. And he talks about what causes that, and it could be any kind of infraction. But what I think was more interesting is that there were days in which basically, even if you had done everything right, they would find a way to say that you did something wrong and force you down into the sand and to become a sugar cookie. And the lesson was meant to be that life's not fair. Some days you could do everything right and you're still going to end up a sugar cookie. So what do you think, sugar cookies? What did this section stick out to you, and what did you take away from it?
I really like this section because it reminds me of being in the military and thinking, why the hell are we doing this? This isn't right. But then once you kind of understand what the teaching is and what the value is, you know, you realize life isn't fair. So, you know, it gives you tools on how to handle stress, how to handle, you know, surprise, you know, situations. Kind of, you know, we have the hurricanes that come down here, and just how easily, you know, we calmly adapt to those situations. I think is, you know, kind of what he's trying to get at. You know, life's not fair. It's going to throw you curveballs, but don't sweat it. You'll get through it. And, you know, I think that's what I took out of the chapter.
Yeah. In the speech, anytime I've heard it, this was always one of my favorite too, just because it's such a visual of the sugar cookie. It makes so much sense. In the book, he explains the sugar cookie, but then goes deeper into another scenario with, another military guy who gets injured pretty seriously, and just mindset and how this guy, you know, I mean, he had some serious injuries, but he didn't let it get him down and was still productive and successful after. So I think the importance of a good mindset and moving on from some of the adversity and setbacks is super important.
Yeah, Suzanne, I think that person was Moki, right? They're riding their bikes and he was paralyzed. And the Admiral said, you know, there not one day did he cry about his misfortune. He just kept pushing forward. And life's not fair. And, you know, everybody wants the perfect day, but there is no perfect day. It's how we deal with it. Even at JJ Taylor, you're going to get up in the morning if I'm a delivery driver, and then you walk into a Circle K and the manager's jumping in your throat because she or he's having a bad day. And then all of a sudden your day's ruined. But it's how you respond to that or any however many, you know, trials and tribulations we deal with as a company. And basically those who acknowledge that life is a struggle, life is broken, and it's how you accept it and deal with it will make you successful. And the ones that don't accept that will constantly struggle. And I think that's what he's trying to say here.
No, absolutely. I think the underlying message, and I think it's so important for people to learn, is you can do everything right and still lose. You can do everything you're supposed to do and still lose. And that's not weakness. That's just life. And you have to learn how to take those losses and keep going. It's essential, because if you can't get past that, if you can't get past the idea that life isn't fair and that you've been slighted or that you've been, you know, whatever, it can hold you back. You know, I think that's why it's such an important part of the SEAL training that he's describing here, is that the instructors really want the enrollees to understand life's not fair. Fairness isn't a thing, you know, and that's so essential in a military setting, right? I can't have a debate about is it fair or not for me to give an order to one person over another when the firefight is going on. You take the order, you get the job done. And that's what they're trying to instill, is this mentality that says, don't argue with me about you had to do this last time or it's somebody else's turn. When you get an instruction, you do the instruction, because that's the difference potentially between life or death. The stakes may be smaller outside of a situation like that, but the lesson is still just as apropos. If I ask you to do something as a leader, it's because it's what needs to get done. And it's not that you can't question it, but that you got to understand that sometimes it's life's not fair. Like you said, Pete, sometimes you just walk into somebody else's bad day and it's going to, you know, it's going to hit you. And are you going to let that bad day ruin your day just because it happened? Or are you going to say, you know what? Life's not fair. They're having a bad day. I'm having a good day. That's the way it went. I can continue to keep having a good day, or I can, you know, drag myself down to their level so we're all having a bad day together, but that doesn't always achieve the kind of results that we want to achieve. So it's just such an interesting way that they teach the lesson by saying, you know what, you can do everything right. Your uniform could be perfect. I'm still going to make you go be a sugar cookie. But I think the underlying lesson is just so important, that you can do it all right. You can do everything you're supposed to, and shit's still going to happen some days, and you've just got to be ready to take that hit and keep going and push past it and persevere and understand that just because it isn't your fault doesn't mean it isn't your problem.
And I think it's a two-way street too. You know, if you say, if you, you know, you're with your partner, whoever, and you roll into a situation like that, you know, you maintaining, you know, your composure, staying calm, just saying, hey, it is what it is, let's push through, it's going to give that other person some motivation also to push through.
Right. Well, that's his heart piece. Just, you know, if somebody's having a bad day, and, you know, all it takes is one person to make a difference. He talks about it. So I think about, well, the training I had when I was in service or even SEAL. I mean, you want praise, you want everything to go perfect. I'm not sure any mission, you know, can go off perfectly. They're just trying to teach you that life is broken. There's adversity, and there's going to be change. And how do you adapt to that? So absolutely.
Yeah, and I think one of the biggest tells of someone's character is how they adapt to that change. You know, how do they get past not getting that promotion? You know, how did they handle, they got a flat tire this morning, their truck broke down, that Circle K manager yelled at you, you know, seeing how they bounce back, handle the situation and didn't ruin their entire day. It really tells you a lot about somebody, more so than maybe how they act in perfect scenarios.
Oh, I absolutely couldn't agree more, Dustin. It's like I say, if you really want to see somebody's character, turn off the Wi-Fi. Watch what happens. How quick do they lose their shit when they can't get on the internet? Will tell you a lot about your spouse or significant other's real character.
Individuals not get their way, Dustin just said it, and then how do they react? Sets the tone of their character, but then, you know, how do you guide that person through that? You know, is everything in the world.
All right, let's talk about failure can make you stronger. So in this chapter, he introduces us to the circus. And the circus is extra physical workouts, extra PT, calisthenics, etc. When you fall behind, when you come in last, if you're not up to standard, you were sent to the circus at the end of the day, which means on top of all the work you had to do for your SEAL training, you have to do additional work, which is then going to make you even more tired for the next day. And that, you know, him and his partner ended up in a handful of circuses on their way to becoming SEALs, and that it was the time in that circus that really led them to greater strength. So what did you guys think of the circus and how failure can make you stronger?
Well, we talk about this in the Great Manager program, just sort of letting your team make mistakes so they learn from them. Failure certainly makes you stronger, because if you've ever made a mistake before, anyone, you're not going to make it again if you learned your lesson from it. So that's sort of what struck me about it is, as leaders, we need to let our team make those safe mistakes so that they learn from them.
I really like this chapter myself because just occupational mindset that I have, and just in life, I guess, you know, things happen, bad things happen, and we react to them. And that's why we have, you know, OSHA and, you know, all these, you know, regulations and things that we follow. But things do have to go bad sometimes for you to learn from them and then to make things better and more safe just more efficient going forward.
Yeah, and I think it's only truly a mistake if it's not a learning opportunity. If you didn't learn from it, then it's a mistake.
Mistakes happen daily, you know, on different, you know, levels from small to large. I mean, I don't know. I can reflect back. I made a mistake when I went to school. I think I changed my concentration and major like 5 times. Oh, that was a mistake. Nope, that was another mistake. I think after my 4th or 5th mistake is how I ended up in the Army. I just waved the white flag. I go, I need somebody to get my butt into shape and figure out what life's going to be, because I was making mistake after mistake. You know, and next thing I know, I'm in a recruiting office. You know, sign me up. So true. And then, you know, when you make those mistakes, to Dustin's point, if you don't learn from them, then, you know, shame on us. And you keep making this, if you keep making the same mistake over and over, you have to start asking yourself some questions like, you know, what am I doing wrong here? Cause you're not being self-aware, to get better. And that's what we need to do as leaders. And I feel good at JJ Taylor, a lot of our leadership, empowering them to make decisions. So, you know, they can learn, and it's okay to make the mistake. Nobody wants to fail. I mean, it's human nature. And no matter how I try to teach everybody to, it's okay to fail. No, I'm not going to fail. Okay, well, good luck with that. Let me know how that works.
You know, I love a good turn of phrase, and I think the phrase, don't be afraid of the circus, is such a great one to describe that feeling of, you know, what he's really saying is don't be afraid of the work. Don't be afraid of the extra work that you have to do to become great. Don't be afraid of that extra PT, that extra calisthenic, that extra time put in. It's going to pay off. It's going to make you stronger. And so I love a good phrase, and I think this is one of them. Don't be afraid of the circus. It's a circus out there. Anybody that's ever spent any time in the trade knows that it is a circus out there. Don't be afraid of the circus. Get out, get your hands dirty, try things, fail at things. It's only going to make you smarter and better and more capable over time. But if you're afraid to engage, if you're afraid to try, then you're afraid to fail. And if you're afraid to fail, then you're never going to be able to truly succeed, because nobody that has ever achieved great success got there without hiccups along the way. So don't be afraid of the circus. Just embrace it, dive in, get dirty. I think it's a great phrase to really inspire your folks. And if you get them to read this book or listen to this book, I think it's one of those great little phrases that you can latch into to motivate people quickly to say, hey, you know, I know it's a whole lot of cases and bad weather and people are being crazy, but don't be afraid of the circus. Get out there and dig in and get it done.
Yeah. Well, the Admiral said it. I think as he closed, it was, whether we talk about learning from the mistakes, but, you know, all the, as you said, Jeff, you get out there and then you do fail, you learn mistakes, but along the way, you can start thinking about all the, how many, many hundreds of successes did you have because of what you learned.
So our next section is called You Must Dare Greatly. And in this part, he talks about succeeding at the obstacle course by learning to go head down the rope instead of taking the safer route. What did you guys think about daring greatly and the willingness to take on a risk?
I thought it was a great chapter, because it's, at least how I interpreted, was don't be complacent. You know, don't be afraid to look at something. You know, yes, it's working, but could it work better? And you might change it, you might try it, it may not work better, but you didn't know until you tried it. And the same thing, maybe I have to try something else again.
This chapter really made me think, one thing I love about the way he writes this book is he always gave sort of a silly example, maybe in training or this obstacle course, somebody goes head down first just to win, to get the best time. But then he relates it to a real life, more serious scenario of a hostage situation. So I like how he compares that for us non-military people, you know. It's sort of like Dustin said, the things you learned in basic training and you think they're putting you through these crazy things, but putting you in the mindset to tackle real work.
I agree. I like that he gives a real life scenario or more relatable scenario, as well as like his military, like the helicopter landing. Like, I couldn't relate to that. Like, it's interesting to read and, like, you know, to try and put yourself there, but you can't if you've never been in that situation. But then, like, going head down in a rope like that, I could, you know, we've all been on a rope at some point, so it's easier to relate to that. So I do like that he does that in each chapter.
Yeah, risk taking, you know, everyone thinks, you know, taking risk is easy, but it's not easy. I remember, I don't know if Dustin remembers, but it was on my base of training. I'm sure it's changed versus what he did, but there was an obstacle course and confidence course. It was two different courses. And we had to go up, I guess the best way to describe it is if anyone sees these like forest towers where they're overlooking the forest for wildfires or like little platforms. So we're groups of three and we had to pull each other up this tower. And, we weren't hooked up to anything. We had to do it ourselves. And one person would have to pull themselves up. Then your team's pushing you. And then when you get up there, you pull them up. And then, of course, the last person was the easiest. The middle person was the toughest. So we would change it up each time or go up. And I don't remember what level I was, but I was high up enough where you had to flip yourself up. So when I got flipped up there and they were trying to pull me in, my belt buckle got caught on the edge and I was dangling off the edge and I was shitting my pants. Because, you know, I'm looking like I'm 50 feet up in the air, however high I was up, and they could not pull me up. My belt kept getting tugged, and I'm seeing the drill sergeants down there. All they were doing was laughing. Look at him, you know. And but I tell you, when that was done, I mean, you built confidence and taking that risk. So, his chapters go, there's a connection here if you're following it, because, you know, life's a struggle. There's going to be failure out there. You want to succeed. Whether it's your family, whether it's work, but I mean, if you don't take any risk whatsoever at any type of level, then you're not going to get anywhere. And that's all they were, that's all he's trying to teach here. Just like that hostage situation. I mean, you know, it's very risky, but you know, if you don't do it, then the hostages don't get saved. So it's a great life lesson.
Yeah. I liked that hostage situation analogy, and story insofar as he talks about that, you know, this is a very risky maneuver, what these guys had to do, fly in low, come up high over the wall, land on a very small piece of real estate. And yet what he mentions is that it's a risk, but it was a calculated risk. And he says it's a calculated risk because these guys had flown these helicopters to their limits in training so many times. They knew every inch of their machinery. They knew what it could do. Even though they had never flown this mission, they had flown as much as you can fly and prepare and be ready for it in the rise up to that. And so when I thought about, you know, he does advocate here strongly, you've got to take risks, and he's right. But I also thought it was very interesting his take on those risks can be calculated. And what makes a risk calculated? Training, knowledge, experience. Putting in the work ahead of time and knowing everything you can know reduced the risk to its lowest level. There was still going to be risk and there was still life or death on the line, but that risk was minimized as far as it could have been because of the experience and training and knowledge of the people taking those risks. So if you find yourself as someone who's maybe more risk adverse, maybe risk scares you quite a bit, I think one of the things to consider here is, as he says, what makes a risk calculated? What mitigates that risk? The training, the knowledge, the experience that you can put in ahead of time to make sure that you are as confident as possible and that risk kind of fades away because of it. And it doesn't seem as risky as it may seem to someone like us who's, if you've never flown a helicopter like that, you don't know what the limits of that machine are. But if you know it backwards and forwards, maybe what looks risky to us isn't as risky as others might.
Well, in all fun, we even talk about risk every time I have a leadership meeting or a team build. And then, after the meeting, you know, part of it is to have fun and build relationships. And everyone always jokes that after the meeting is when the risk really starts, because everyone knows that pictures and videos will end up in my next meeting. So it's a big risk you know, to go out after a meeting because they know they're going to end up in a slideshow at some point in time.
Yeah, but that's high risk, high reward, because being in the slideshow, that's a badge of honor. You're not really one of the managers until you've ended up in a slideshow doing something kind of embarrassing. That's how we know we love you. All right. What about standing up to the bullies? The next section here talks about that you have to stand up to the bullies in order to change the world.
Don't back down from sharks.
Yeah. I mean, there's bullies. You know what? There's bullies here in JJ Taylor, most likely, in school, in life, you know, at work, everywhere. And if we don't push them down, you know, I mean, they're the ones that, you know, can control your life. They can ruin people's lives. You know, bullies are terrible, and it takes a lot of courage to, you know, stand up to them.
And I think looking at it as not just looking at bullies, but, you know, competition, you know, we go out in the trade, you see Budweiser out there, you know, we're not going to just turn around and leave, you know, we're going to go in there and, you know, we're going to push forward and do what we have to do. So not necessarily someone, you know, just picking on me, but it could be anything. Could be confrontation, could be, you know, other competition out there in the market, or really anywhere else in life. Just having the confidence to push forward and do what you think's right, and just keep moving.
Well, you're right. That's a good call out, Dustin. I mean, Budweiser, I mean, putting it in perspective now, because they act like bullies with customers and retailers, and with our current business situation and the declines that Bud Light is having right now, we're still struggling to steal a little extra space and achieve some results that should be going in our favor, because they're bullying retailers or bullying buyers, and they're afraid to make that move because, you know, Anheuser-Busch had such this large share, always had it for a long time. So they're using fear and intimidation. And it's going to take a little while, but, you know, we're going to persevere and push through that. But that was a great segue there, Dustin, of just bullies thrive on fear and intimidation. And it's going to require, you know, a certain individual to be courageous to push through that and not, you know, back down from that fear.
Two things struck me as I was reading through this section on standing up to the bullies. Number one, in all the examples he gives about this, and he gives some very interesting examples, to be sure, at no point was he the aggressor. At no point was he going out and looking for a fight. And at no point, even with one particular bully that he describes, wasn't even impolite, but he was firm and he was resolute and he would not be intimidated. So standing up to the bullies, you know, it doesn't require getting on their level. It doesn't require bullying back. It doesn't require being aggressive. It's just about having the confidence to stand your ground and not be intimidated and press forward. And the other thing that I thought was interesting here is going back to his point about you can't go it alone. In every situation, part of what made it possible to stand up to the bullies was having someone with you, having a partner, having people that had your back. You know, the safety in numbers, if you will, or really the strength in numbers of saying, you know, we know we've got people that are on our side here, and that gives us the ability to stand up to the one who might be trying to intimidate us down. But we can push back when we know we've got our tribe behind us. All right. We're running towards the end here with our next section. He talks about rising to the occasion. And there's several anecdotes, but with one common thread, and that is that no one here was ever alone. So talk to me about rising to the occasion and what you guys took away from it.
Well, I mean, when I think about rising to the occasion is, you know, when you have to be your very best, no matter what that occasion is, you know, work related. I have to confront a very upset customer or employee, or I got to deal with a family personal problem. I mean, my father passed away when I was 16. It was a very, very tough time, dark time. And, you know, I had to rise up and take care of my mother, but I didn't do it by myself because I had friends that took me through it. So in this chapter, you know, even in the instructor mentioned, you know, this is when you have to be your very best. You're going to go in the water. It's going to be dark. You're not going to see your swim buddy. You're going to get disoriented. You know, he's basically, you know, warning them how tough it's going to be. And this is when you just have to reflect right into your heart and be your very best and be strong. And that's basically what he's saying. And God, he even talked about it. You know, when he goes into his, I think it was the Ranger, right? The Ranger. So, yeah, again, this goes back to life is broken. We're all going to have dark moments. And that's when you have to draw from your heart and be your very best. And know you can't do it alone. You need, you know, a good, strong network of friends and family to help push you through it.
Yeah, I thought it was good, too, because it is definitely a great training opportunity. Kind of the scenario they put the SEALs down where they have to swim under the ship and you're going into a dangerous situation. But it's more of just to teach them, you know, if you rise up, you're going to accomplish this. And then the next time you do it, it's going to be that much easier. So if you just backed away because you were afraid, you're not going to learn from it. You're not going to, you know, you're not going to get outside of your comfort zone to make your non-comfort zone your new comfort zone. So if that makes any sense.
Yeah. When I read this chapter, it really just reminded me of, or made me think about how often I go out of my own comfort zone and really how often I trust myself that, you know, if I do, no matter what, I'm going to grow. I could fail, I could, you know, but no matter what, you're going to grow. So if you have to face this tough situation again, hopefully you'll be a little bit more comfortable, but you'll remind yourself that you're able to do it.
Well, I think the best part of that chapter was just, again, with that Ranger that was fallen, but he talked about different events, helicopter crashes, plane crashes, and then just those were all dark moments. And if you think through, I think this is the chapter where I kind of choked up or cried because of all the community and families and friends rising to the occasion to help those families get through those dark times. So that was definitely the, I think the moral of what he was trying to say. Everyone's going to face it at some point in your life. And, you know, you just got to dig deep down and be your very best.
Let's talk about Give People Hope and Singing in the Sand.
I thought this was a good one, mainly because of how well that actually works. You know, everyone here is, you know, in the Army and military, everyone sings cadence when they run, but you'd be surprised of how much faster, how much longer, how much more enjoyable it is to run, no matter how much rain, shine, how horrible the situation is, to sing that cadence, it makes a big effect. And you'll even see a lot of ex-military members to this day, you know, still get motivated by, you know, cadence when they hear it on a movie or radio or anything. It's pretty surprising.
Yeah, you never would have thought of, you know, we're going to do a 10-mile run, and then when you're, you know, you're singing and chanting, you're like, oh, the run's over already? I can't believe it. It is an effect for sure. Yeah, and hope's the most powerful, besides heart, you know, hope's the most powerful, you know, feeling in the world, right? I mean, God, if you don't have hope, then all of a sudden, what are you striving for in life if you don't have that hope ingrained?
Yep. I mean, it's no different than, you know, a delivery driver looking at an impossible day, thinks it can't be done. You know, and they got the driver next to them, or, you know, just talking to someone throughout the day is like, hey, you got this. You've done it before. Let's get after it. You know, and I think just that hope and motivation, you know, definitely helps.
I thought it was interesting how something as simple as singing, a seemingly little thing, could be the catalyst for giving hope to others. I think about some of the little things that we do that end up, whether we fully intentionally or not, do exactly that. You know, the number of days that the delivery managers will sit in the driver room there, Dustin, and hand out ice cream cones as the guys are walking in, right? It seems like a silly little thing. It's an ice cream cone at the end of the day, but there's something about that I think gives the guys a little hope that the day could be better tomorrow and a reason to keep driving through the end of the day. Sometimes it's the littlest stuff that can have such a big impact on, you know, call it hope, call it motivation, call it that perseverance, willingness to continue on, but it's really just about reminding them that there are silver linings in all kinds of little places and that you can make something out of a bad situation.
Well, it's like a group effort. I mean, again, hope, he says hope is most powerful in the universe, an exact quote there, but when his buddy was trying to quit the mudflats and he was holding on to him, wouldn't let him go, and he shook him away, because I'm going anyway. But then when everybody started singing, he stopped and turned around because it was the force of the group. So like what Dustin says in delivery meetings, I've been in sales meetings where we talk about trying to get a sale done and a particular sales rep couldn't get it done. I've tried and tried and tried, but then other salespeople like, don't give up. Here's how I was able to overcome it. Another one said, this is how I did it. And then another meeting would come by and all of a sudden I did it. And that person was so excited. Hope is strong. Why is it strong? Because you have others around you for, you know, life experiences or guiding that person, or all it takes is one. Again, we say one person to make a difference. That one person who started singing made the difference in that whole group.
And the power of teamwork again comes back in this, because that one person united the whole team. And even as the drill instructors were telling them to stop, they just got louder. So I sort of loved that part of this chapter.
Right. Tried to scare them and it didn't work.
Yeah. I like the best part is because in a real scenario like that, the drill instructors really don't want you to quit. And they're telling you no. And that just motivates the team to push harder. You know, they don't want this guy to be right. I'm going to prove them wrong.
Last but not least, never, ever give up. Don't ring the bell. Tell me about not ringing the bell.
If you ring the bell, you give up on life.
Yeah, I think it goes back to all these chapters. I couldn't even imagine what someone that rang the bell, what they feel like. They'll probably regret that to the day they die.
So this chapter, he talks about that at SEAL training camp, there is a bell, a big brass bell on a post. And the bell is how you give up. It's how you get out of SEAL training. When it gets too hard, when it gets too rough and you can't handle it anymore, you go ring this bell 3 times, and that signifies that you have quit and you have decided to walk away from this and you're done. And so don't ring the bell becomes a keystone for SEAL trainees and therefore, you know, the lesson he's trying to teach. So, yeah, what other thoughts about don't ring the bell?
Well, I mean, it's like Dustin said, you know, you're going to quit and you'll regret it for the rest of your life because you quit, because you're going to second guess yourself. Like, could I have done that? You know, could I have really seen it through? I think he states in the chapter that, you know, again, life's full of difficulties. And I believe you said that try to remember that there's somebody else always out there, maybe worse off than you. And, you know, when you think about quitting, I mean, there might be times that all of us have quit something, but there's a reason why you're quitting that. You know, maybe it's against your morals. Maybe it's something that you don't believe in of what you're doing. I mean, it depends on what the purpose of your quitting is. But if you're just quitting because you just can't do it, you got to dig in and he's trying to teach you just fight through it and don't be a quitter, because if you're a quitter in life, then you're never going to achieve, success in life. And that's like a J.J. Taylor. I mean, we might have employees quit because they can't physically do the job. We've heard that. Or quit because maybe they just don't like the actual particular job. I've heard salespeople quit because they get so stressed because they can't even make a sales call. So I think it is if you reflect on what you're, you know, dealing with and come to terms with it, it's okay. Because then you push forward and you understand. I think what the Admiral's just trying to say is just don't quit because you think you can't do it. Find help, find support, dig in, and just don't be a quitter because you think you can't do something.
Yeah, the phrase I wrote down reading this chapter was, we quit many times on the way to not quitting. And that, you know, it's not about the quit in itself. It's about the giving up, right? There are reasons to quit. There are moments when the smart thing to do is quit. If something's not working, if you've gone down the wrong path, there's a time and a place where quitting is the right answer. But in a larger sense, it's the not giving up. It's we might quit a lot on the way to not quitting, but having that bigger purpose is what really matters. And it's about better to fail than to give up along the way. I think that's the to me, the big lesson of don't ring the bell is, you know, you may make it, you may not. But if you ring the bell, you'll never know. You'll never know because you gave up. It was worse than quitting to just throw your hands in the air and say, I can't, I'm not even going to try. So I liked that idea that it's you can quit a lot of times on the way to not quitting, but you ring the bell and it's more than a quit. It's I didn't even go there.
Yeah, I think you said it perfectly, Jeff. There's a difference between quitting and giving up. There's a difference between failing and quitting. There's giving up is entirely, you know, its own separate thing. And I think that's what he was hitting on is, you know, don't give up on yourself. You know, if you're not going to succeed, if you're not going to make it, you know, let it be outside factors, but don't let it be yourself, you know, holding you back.
It definitely can be an environment too that kind of breeds that it's okay to give up or it's okay to quit. But I feel like working in different workplaces, I've seen very many environments where it's okay, that didn't work, let's try something else. I know change is hard, but you know, we'll get through it together. More of a team family mentality versus everybody kind of does what they are comfortable doing, and if someone doesn't like change, then we just give up on it right away because someone doesn't like it. So
yeah, and if you look back through all the chapters, you know, how they're going through the trainings, the tough scenarios, how they're pushing them, they're making them a sugar cookie, they're basically, you know, getting you into that mindset that you don't need to quit, you can push through this. You know, there is no reason you should give up on yourself. You know, there is a difference, like I say, giving up and quitting is not necessarily the same thing.
And he just talks about life is what you make it, and you can make it great. It's not, like you said, you have the, if you put yourself in the mindset, it's on you.
Well, we have come to the end of our 10 principles. So I will now ask my Intrepid Book Club soldiers, final thoughts on Make Your Bed. Did you like this book? Would you recommend this book? And any, you know, major, what's the big takeaway that you hope people get from this book?
I think it's a great read. It really covers all bases between, you know, starting out, how, you know, what's the difference between a good leader, motivation, bullies, not quitting. Overall, I think it's great. I think it's, you know, it basically describes a great leader, and you can see it around us, you know, who has these core principles. And then the other thing to take away is a sugar cookie is absolutely horrible. So I just giggle every time I hear it because it is a very miserable experience.
Dustin's going to have a sand pit out back of the delivery room here in short order.
I wouldn't put that on anybody. It actually is miserable.
I haven't been a sugar cookie in the book, you know, rolling. I mean, I've been in the dirt, in the mud. I'm sure Dustin, I've been like, but I literally haven't jumped in the ocean and then rolled around. I can only imagine because I've been in the dirt and the mud is miserable. And that sounds 10 times more miserable than what I did. So, and then being it, and then, you know, you have to be in it all day long. I can only imagine, but no, I think I love, everyone knows I love the book and I passed it around my entire family. So they've all read it because I just, you know, there's so many books out there, so many, you know, different life lessons, but I think this particular one is just very, very simple, right? Like I said, it's a short read. It's very simple. You kind of relate. You're starting to start each day with a small task complete. And maybe, like I said, some, you know, maybe tomorrow morning, I'm not going to make my bed because you know, I'm just that one particular day. I just want to veg out. Might feel guilty about it, but starting off with, you know, being complete and then knowing that, you know, life isn't fair. You know, what does life owe you to make sure your day is perfect every day? So, you know, life's not fair. You need to find help, you know, all along the way. You know, like you said, make as many friends as possible, you know, sincere, good hearted friends, and take little risks, take risks in life. And I know everyone hears it when I say it, but I'll close my piece is every meeting I say is change somebody's life. Just one person. All it takes is one person to you know, change their life. Cause then that person can change somebody else's life. And then the world can be a better place. So I say how JJ Taylor, you know, you change one life of JJ Taylor, it compounds, and then JJ Taylor will be a much better place to work. So I love it.
Yeah, I loved the book too. I think just putting it into perspective, specifically about other people having it worse than you. I mean, some of these stories, I just can't even imagine. You know, we go through hard stuff here, but nothing compared to hanging out with Saddam Hussein and, you know, hostage situations and parachute falls. So I just think the perspective of the book is what I really enjoyed about it.
Yeah, I thought it was a really good book as well. And I actually recommended it to someone this morning. They caught me with my headphones on. They asked what I was doing, and I told them. And I said, you know, I read the book when I was in a tough place years and years ago, but it was recommended to me by a therapist. And it really made a difference on just getting myself going and changing my mindset. It was a super quick read, so it was an easy way to get started on doing something for myself. And the person actually told me that their wife is struggling with some things right now, and I said, try the book. I mean, it was a good starting point for me, and so they took down the name of the book. They actually bought the audio book while they were standing here. So, yeah, it's a very good book for many, many reasons.
You know, Zig Ziglar said that motivation is like showering. It requires regular application in order to work. And I think this is one of those books that is worth a reread once a year. You know, this book has such great lessons and such great motivation in it that it's definitely one that I think, because it's 95 pages, you can pick it up, you can zip back through a chapter in just a few minutes if it helps you out. But to sit down with this one over a pint once a year and read the book, or even just read the speech. The great thing about this book, the last little section of it, is the actual commencement speech from UT transcribed. And that takes maybe 15 minutes to read. But it's a great motivator, and it's a great way to sort of refresh yourself on these 10 principles. So I agree. I think this is a great book, well worth your time, whether you're in a leadership role or not, and definitely should check it out. Make Your Bed by Admiral William McRaven, a great read and a great discussion. So let me thank my book club participants one last time. Bria, thank you for being here. So much fun to talk to you on this one.
Yeah, thank you.
And Dustin, thank you for joining us as well.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Jeff.
My pleasure. Pete, first time on the podcast, and I'm so glad we were able to get you on to talk about this.
Oh, I appreciate the invitation. I really loved enjoying talking about the book with everyone.
And last but not least, Suzanne, I couldn't do the book club without you. So thank you so much for being here once again.
Always fun. Thank you.
And thank you all for joining us and listening. Hope you had as much fun with this summer book club series as we have. Check out the other episodes as well on the feed, and make sure you stay subscribed. We got a lot of great stuff coming here this fall from Brew University Podcasting. So we look forward to keeping you entertained all through the year. Have a great rest of your day. And tomorrow morning, don't forget to make your bed.